Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey guys, we're back. Today with me, I have Elise Dharma, and she is the queen of Instagram. I mean, I'm not sure how else to call it, or a boss. Everyone's a boss now. And we just talked a little bit. I went on Elise's website, and it's really reminding me of Natalie Sisson. So shout out, Natalie, if you're listening.
Shout out.
But yeah, this whole digital nomad thing, you know, you're actually super proud of that, it seems like. But, you know, I live in Chiang Mai right now, and there's a big group of people who are like, we're not digital nomads anymore. You know, like, it's like anyone cares, really, you know, like... But it's like this kind of like fight back against it, right? Like I don't want to be labeled that. I'm a slow traveler, or they'll come up with some other things, mm-hmm. right? But they're just not digital nomads. I think in Chiang Mai, digital nomads are usually broke. So maybe that's where the stigma's coming from. But
interesting. Yeah. It's also so trendy. Maybe people are maxed out with the trend there.
Yeah, maybe it is. Because in the group I'm in, we've been digital nomads for like 5 or 6 years or even longer. So maybe it's just been played out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's such a particular term. I mean, I use the term to describe myself, but I'm not a full-time digital nomad. If we're looking at the definition of a nomad as someone who doesn't have a home and they're constantly roaming, that's not me exactly. So when I first started building up my brand, I really started using the term travelpreneur or traveling entrepreneur because I had a home base and I wasn't living out of my suitcase and broke, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, I do see a picture of you with a suitcase. I finally found one.
the Natalie things. Connection.
Yes, so I have found one, but you definitely don't seem broke in that picture.
No, being broke wouldn't work for me. I need my security and my roof over my head too much to be broke.
The episodes that we're kind of going over now on the podcast is, the theme is online courses, right? And the reason we reached out is because you have a Instagram class, I don't know, like a master class. Mm-hmm. And I want to know how you're using that in your business. Like, is that just like a tripwire? Is it what piece of the funnel it is? I'm really curious how you have implemented that into your brand right now.
Yeah, it's essentially a way to get people introduced to the opportunity that is Instagram, especially those who want to use it to grow their business. And then it leads to my course, Insta Growth Boss. So that's how the masterclass is playing into things. My relationship with Instagram has really been a long journey, I would say. It started back in 2013 when I was hired. I was working in social media marketing at the time. In my day job, and I was hired by a friend's company to grow their Instagram for their t-shirt brand. It was an e-commerce brand. And I, at that time, Instagram was sort of the wild, wild west, and I was just making it up as I went along. But because Instagram was so untapped at that time, we were able to reach 100,000 followers within 6 months. And a big part of that was influencer marketing. So I was reaching out to influencers on behalf of the brand. And that's what I did for a couple of years. I then went on to quit my job. Grow my own agency, and I continue to focus in on the e-commerce space. And Instagram was a huge part of that because e-commerce brands are so visual. A couple of years into running my own agency, I wanted to grow it. I wanted more clients. So I decided to grow my personal Instagram account as a portfolio piece to show future clients that, hey, I can grow Instagram accounts. So that's what I set off to do in the summer of 2016. And I started growing my Instagram account based on my travel photos that I had acquired over the years of being my own boss and being a digital nomad. And then what ended up happening from there was I had an audience of people following me who weren't interested in my services and my agency. They just wanted to know other things like, how was I traveling so much? How was I running my own business? How was I growing on Instagram? So that just set me off into a whole new direction, creating a second business really based off of my personal brand. And from there, when I really got to know my audience, their number one question was, how do we grow on Instagram? How do we make this part of our business? How do we become an influencer? Or if I have my own business, how do I actually generate sales from Instagram? So it was really from their feedback that I developed my first course, Instagrowth Boss. And that's really what's led me to where I am today.
So how do you pick, I guess, or choose what to put on Instagram at this point? Because I see a lot of different types of pictures. I just scrolled through one of yours, and it is mostly travel. But just looking at this, I would not think that you're selling anything.
Yeah, so with my Instagram account, I really started in the travel niche because that was the content that I had available at that time. But if I were to start from scratch today, I would really think of myself as a personal brand, and I encourage anyone in the online business space to do this, and choose one main theme or thing that you want to be known for. Like, what is that overarching theme? And for yourself, it's probably courses, right? And then for a lot of people, they feel, well, okay, that's not very visual, and that's not really me, and it's not really that interesting. So in that case, I say, choose a secondary theme, and you can choose up to five themes. So what are the five themes that really represent who you are as a personal brand, but also what resonates with your target follower that you want to attract to your profile? In the case of your brand, Tom, you help people create online courses. So you want to attract people who are probably, you know, online business owners who are interested in having their own course. And you're likely wanting to also attract people who are interested in maybe passive income streams. So those are topics that you can start to play with. Then you want to look at your personal life and think, well, what are the things that represent me that I'm interested in that would also resonate with that person? So for me, my personal brand, I kept it really simple. Travel was my overarching theme. And then having my own business, being a digital nomad, was kind of the secondary theme. So when you're looking at my feed, it's very travel focused. Those are the visuals to really captivate people's attention. And then when you dig into my captions, that's where I share a lot of my business realities. It's not really, there are some tips, there are some tricks, but I really like to keep my captions for the real talk, the real deal of what it's like.
Yeah, I can kind of see why people were more interested in your travel than the agency. Because me personally, if I was a client of your agency and I seen this Instagram, I would have been calling you, asking you like, hey, when are you working on my projects? Because I see you traveling all the time. I'm not sure if that would have been the best representation or like, you know, getting me on the same page. But,
but I can see. That was definitely a concern back in the day. But that's a concern. The thing is, I kept my client list pretty close and tight. Mm-hmm. I think at most I had 7 clients at any time, and it was mostly me doing the work. I wasn't trying to grow an agency with a lot of subcontractors. And that was a conversation that we had. I was very transparent with them about my travels, and no one ever came to me with having an issue. And I just made sure that I was always on top of my work so that they never had to, you know, have that feeling of like, hey, Elise, I see you're in Asia, but where's my document that you were supposed to send me? You know, I never wanted someone to feel like that. So to have the luxury of traveling and working online meant that I had to be super disciplined and on top of my work so that my clients were never bitter about that in any sort of way.
When I look at the Instagrowth Boss, I'm seeing registration to a webinar. Can you walk us through what happens from this moment on with the client? Like, how do you lead them down the path to giving you money?
Yeah, so with my course, I created it just about a year ago, and I did a launch, I ran a free challenge, then I invited people into the course, and it was great. About, I think over 50 people joined the course initially, and it was awesome. But then when I just had the sales page up and running, course sales weren't just coming in on their own, so sales became quite static. That's when I started to look into some other options on how I could really warm people up to the idea of the course. I mean, no one likes being sold to right off the bat, right? That's why when you look at my Instagram profile, you're not going to see a whole lot of selling. It's not like, you know, branded quote cards where I'm talking about my course or screenshots of my course or sales prices or anything like that. Because on Instagram, people want to get to know you. They want to get to know, like, and trust you, and they don't really want to be sold to. No one loves that. So I found that was a similar case when I just had a sales page up to my course. No one was that interested. So I realized that I needed to really show them and maybe educate them a little bit on the opportunity that is Instagram. Instagram to grow their business, grow their personal brand, grow their influence, whatever their motivation is. So that's when I developed a live class. This was last year. And whenever I'd run the live class and then present them the course as the solution to everything they need, you know, to set up their account properly, meaning their brand as well, to grow on Instagram so that they're attracting quality followers, and then to monetize that growth, that's something I can't give to you in a 45-minute class, but it's something that I can package into my course. So when I presented it that way, people always bought from those live classes. So that was a really big indicator to me that this was working. This was an offer that people were looking for, and they were willing to put money towards it time and time again. So after running it live a couple times, that's when I looked into an automated masterclass system, and that's what you're looking at today. So generally, the funnel that I have set up is, it's very much ads-based. So I have an ad strategy running where the ads are reaching out to people that Facebook thinks would be likely interested in this class. And then there they join the registration page to the masterclass. And from there, they watch the class. And then when they watch the class, they're given an offer to join the course.
Interesting. So it's like an evergreen webinar running all the time.
Exactly. That was the idea there.
And how do that conversions measure up now compared to the live webinar?
That's a really good question. So in my experience, conversions on a live webinar are always going to be better than an automated webinar. I would say when I ran the classes live, there would typically be a 5-8% conversion of those who registered. With my automated webinar, we're looking at about a 3% conversion.
That's not too bad, especially since you don't have to do it live.
Yeah, that's my feeling. You know, it would be really interesting to A/B test, because I've been running this automated class for several months now, but I am kind of curious if I paused it and for a month I ran the class live each week, I'd be curious to compare sales between those two.
That would be super interesting. Now, when you said you have Facebook picking who they think would be good for the class, what's that mean?
Oh, that's my way of describing my limited knowledge of Facebook ads.
Uh-huh. Yeah, please tell me more.
Well, I started running the campaigns a couple months ago when I launched the masterclass, so I have a general understanding. But what I mean by that is a large percentage of people who are interested in the class are based off of lookalike audiences that I've created in Facebook. So Lookalike audiences, I think, are highly underrated, but I've created lookalike audiences based on my website traffic, based on other people who have already watched the class, and then I've broken them down by country. So Canada, US, Australia, you know, the main countries that I would target for this kind of topic. So I find those lookalike audiences typically convert at the lowest rate.
Yeah, from what I've been seeing with my clients and all my data, a good targeted audience will beat out a lookalike by 70 to 80% every single time.
Oh, really? A targeted audience will beat out a lookalike audience?
Every single time.
Interesting. Is that a cold? What do you mean by targeted?
Targeted. So you create your own audience, not a lookalike. You actually go in and you create a really, really killer audience that you will market to. Yeah. And we beat out lookalikes every single time. And I mean, 80%, I would say that's a low percentage. I mean, we can kill lookalike audiences. So I'm just saying maybe it's worth looking into, because if you're having success with lookalikes, then I can't even imagine what would happen if you had a really good audience that's targeted in.
Definitely getting the wheels turning, and that's a big reason why I've now hired someone to manage my ads who can bring that expertise, because I could do it on my own for a couple months, but now it's better managed by someone else.
Yeah, it's just something I wanted to throw out, because I usually don't see a lot of success with lookalikes. I mean, we have some clients that do, but we can always make a killing once we get off of that. So whoever's doing Facebook ads for you, just make sure they're not just coasting and using your lookalikes, because that is not the way.
That's a really good tip. I will definitely let them know.
So how long or how much did it cost in time and money and just aggravation creating this first course?
Wow, that's a good question. So let me go back, because it was about a year and a half ago. The way I created this course was I actually pre-sold it. So my pre-launch activities were a big factor. So for several months leading up to me having an offer to put out to my audience, I was creating free blog posts. I was going live in my private group. I was going live on my Facebook page. I was hosting what I called Instagram Power Hours, where people can submit their profiles to me. And I would go through and review as many profiles as I could within 1 hour's time, which people really liked. They liked to see me be challenged with 100+ profiles. And that was something I did for free quite a bit. Then when it came to pre-selling the course before it was ever built, I developed a 5-day challenge. So that was where people could really get, you know, close to me. I was there with them every single day, providing Instagram strategies and tips, and then, you know, holding a live stream at night where we could touch base and I could answer any of their questions. And then on day 4 of the challenge is when I presented basically the outline of the course, everything that I was going to provide inside the course. And to my shock, several people actually bought while I was still on that live stream. And I was beyond nervous. Like, my boyfriend was watching me and he just kept texting like, slow down, slow down. I was just trying to race through the pitch because I was so unsure about what it would be like. I hadn't really sold to my audience very much up until that point. So I was really nervous for that reaction. But at the same time, I knew from a business perspective, it was necessary for me to start selling, because I couldn't sustain constantly giving away free information and free value. That's not really how, you know, businesses grow. So several people bought while I was still live, and those initial people who joined, they got the best deal. Like, they were the ones taking the biggest risk, the biggest leap into investing into something that was brand new. So they got the best deal. They're my OG course members.
OG.
And yeah, exactly. I still know like the first 10 people who bought, because they made such an impact on me. So the way I then set it up was I went through about a week's time period for promoting, you know, people to get into the course. And then I ran the course live. So while I was promoting the offer for people to get into the course, I was actually creating the materials for the first week. So I was creating it, and then I would launch it the following week. And when people had access to the first week's materials, I would then go ahead and create the second week's materials. So I had about a week's time to create the materials for each module. Looking back, I would ideally give myself more time than that, because it was a very stressful 4 to 5 weeks of creating the materials and running the course live. So once I finished that, I mean, I was exhausted, but then I was so happy because I had launched a product. I had been paid for it before it was even a thing. And then after the 4 to 5 weeks of intensity, let's call it, I had a finished product that I could then sell over and over again.
How did you come up with the pricing?
That's a good question. I don't think it was too sophisticated. I think I looked at similar courses that were offering the training that I wanted to offer for other platforms like Facebook or Pinterest. And I could see that most were around the price point of $300 to $400. And I also looked at how many content heavy modules I was going to include in the course. The way I structured the course, it had three main modules. Number one was foundations, number two was growth strategies, and number three was monetization. And then the fourth one was all the bonuses. So I knew I had about 4 weeks of really good content. So in my mind, I think I valued each one at, as far as my pricing would go, the value would be way higher, but the pricing was about $100 per content heavy module. And so I knew like the regular price would be about $400. This is when I first launched it. And when I did actually create offers for people to get in right away, I gave them 50% off of that price. So it was a compelling offer for them to join right away.
How did you come up with the outline or what to actually teach the people? Because that's a very important piece too.
Yeah, this part was extremely painful, and I totally underestimated how hard it is to take information from your brain that is relatively common knowledge to you and teach it to others. I think we underestimate the skill of being a teacher, and for this portion, this is where I really procrastinated a lot. Like, I knew months leading up to me launching this course that this is what I should be working on, but I felt so stuck for so long because when I was looking at, you know, online materials of how to create a course, I didn't really see anyone teaching you how to extract that information from your brain and turn it into pretty videos and workbooks that could actually teach other people. So this is where I dug deep into my teaching roots. I had been a piano teacher for many years, so I had that background in being able to take a concept that's new and maybe complicated, especially with piano, it's like a learning another language. Mm-hmm. So I had that background in being able to distill that information down so that it could be simply understood and followed. So for me, the big catalyst was coming up with the main structure, the three pillars of the course. Those were, again, foundations, growth, and monetization strategies. Once I realized that that's the flow that someone needed to follow to actually get success from Instagram, I was able to go into each one of those concepts and break down what steps someone needed to take in the foundation phase, and then what they needed to do in the growth phase, and then what they needed to do in the monetization phase. And then when I broke down each step, that's where I looked at, okay, what do I need to teach them? Like, I don't need to give them 45 minutes of information here. What can I teach them in 5 to 10 minutes? And that's how long my videos are on average. Mm-hmm. And then what's the action step that they can do right now after watching this video so that they can start seeing results, so that they can start making progress. So that was my thinking when I really structured the content inside the course.
And was it correct? What kind of feedback did you receive?
Yeah, that's really what matters, isn't it, at the end of the day? I would say the first 100 people in my course, because I was working so closely and intimately with them, we had a private Facebook group, some of them got amazing results really, really quickly. And I say some of them because what was surprising to me was that while some people might join your course, not everyone is actually going to do the work and watch the videos and go through the workbooks. And that's something that as a course creator, I find it's my responsibility to a certain extent, right? To motivate people, to keep the information easy to learn, easy to digest, fun to do, maybe create a gamification system within the course itself. So I know I need to do as much as I can there to get people through the course material. But at the end of the day, if they don't do it, that's kind of their decision. So I would say the first 100 people were super active, super engaged. I was active there with them as well. And they were really keeping me up to date with their results. And I had one student who, she joined the course with about 500 followers. And within a few months, she had reached 3,000 followers. But more importantly than that, she had monetized that following. So she had converted several of those followers into clients for her business. And she had generated like $12,000 in revenue just from those clients who booked themselves in from Instagram.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I think of my business, I'm just not seeing how that would work on Instagram. I just cannot connect food photos or travel photos or gym photos with online courses or any type of marketing. Like, it's just, I just don't see a connection there at all.
Yeah. Well, for your business, if I'm assuming you want to attract an online business owner or a business owner in general, you would want to keep your profile probably more in the educational space, like really teaching people the opportunity that is online courses. Or you might also want to inspire them with case studies or success stories and that sort of thing. Or you might want to create original content that an online business owner would resonate with, like a quote card, for example. And that could be something that they could screenshot and share in their own feed, but it has your branding in it. So, yeah, it's an interesting angle when you are like a business owner and you're trying to help other business owners. You get a little creative with the themes and the content that you can put on Instagram, but it's definitely possible.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because I had one of my employees, she's always on Instagram saying like, boss, like I can, you know, run the Instagram account. What should I put on there? I was like, okay, and this is where we're stuck.
Yeah.
She just asked me the one thing I have no idea about at all. I just don't know. Like, what should we put on there? Like, one of my friends, he's been putting quotes on, a lot of quotes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, his picture with someone else's quote and the other person's name. And he actually grew it up to about 15,000 followers in maybe 7-8 months, which is not bad. I don't know. I think it's the hashtags mm-hmm. that he's using. But I was like, yeah, maybe we just copy that. Like, I just wasn't sure. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I would ask your friend. It's awesome that he received such great growth, but was he able to monetize
He's
that
growth?
He's
trying to now. That's the next step. So I'm waiting. Like, I always tell people, like, you know, I'm going to wait to see what happens with him.
I would recommend to try to monetize your growth as you're growing. Like, it looks awesome to have 15,000 followers, but the algorithm also starts to change for your account when you do reach large numbers. Really? It actually becomes harder. Yeah, because you have so many people following you. Typically, your engagement rate goes down as you grow more with more followers. So I would say for me, as I was growing, my sweet spot for my engagement was between when I had 10,000 and 30,000 followers. I was getting a really high percentage of engagement per post that I shared compared to now with 75K plus followers. So now I actually don't even care that much about getting more followers. I care more about engaging with and getting in front of those people who are already following me. So when you are, you know, just starting your growth, that's actually the perfect time to start your monetization strategies right away, because your engagement is at its highest and you want to capture people, you know, in your mailing list or in your funnel, whatever the next step is, as you're growing, not after you've grown.
So what are the ways that you, I guess, recommend to your clients to do that from day one? So when they start putting up the first 10, 20 pictures, what do you tell them to do?
Yeah, I definitely say you need to have the strategy in place first, mm-hmm. of what your personal brand is, what you represent, who you're going to attract, and what themes you're going to share in your profile to attract that target person. For a lot of online business people, they don't need 50,000 followers. They need 1,000, 5,000, 10,000 targeted people that convert into customers in their business. So the first step is always to nail down that strategy. For some people, that might mean that they would create a brand new account, or they would go through their current account and archive old posts that don't really resonate with them anymore or resonate with their target follower. And then, as you said, I would recommend to populate your feed with, I'd say, 12 to 15 posts that represent your new direction. Because when a new potential follower lands on your profile, you want to give them a sense of why they should follow you. They don't need to see your old posts, but if they can just look at that bird's eye view of your profile and look at, you know, 4 to 5 rows of content that's valuable or entertaining or inspiring for them, that's going to let them know what they're in for by following you. So populating your feed with content that they can expect is important. And then as you continue, you want to really get into your posting schedule so that you're consistently posting. I really recommend batching this and doing it once a week, where you use a scheduler and you lay out your next 7 posts and you write out all your captions and you do all that jazz in about an hour on a Sunday versus trying to post on the fly. And then as you have your posting going, that's when your growth strategies kick in. So that comes down to your hashtags. It comes down to the way you're engaging with other accounts on the platform so that you're really attracting that target person, that target follower, over to your account, because that's what really matters. And then as you're growing and as you're using these growth strategies, you do want to continue to let people know of how they can take the next step by following you. That's an awesome first step. But what's next? What gift are you giving them in your bio, for example? That's where you really want to be clear about who you're for and what value they'll get in return by following you. And then that one link in your profile, that's where you really want to give them an incentive. And a gift, for example, a freebie, something to get them into your funnel, into the next step of your business, versus just staying a follower on your Instagram profile.
Have you had any experience with the Instagram paid ads?
I have. I currently run Instagram ads for my masterclass. Mm-hmm. I have never run ads as a way to boost my posts. For me, there's really no ROI. Of course, everyone wants to get super high engagement on their posts and have it be seen by all their followers. But for me, I'm not trying to build a brand as an influencer. And a lot of influencers might go that route because they want to show other brands that they want to work with, hey, I have a highly engaged following here. But for me, as much as I want to have people engaging with my posts, that's great. I don't pay Instagram or Facebook to boost my posts. But what I do is I run Instagram ads that are separate from my feed. And a lot of it is just to get them to know about my masterclass that I'm offering.
Interesting. Okay, Elise, thank you for coming on. And where can people find you?
You can find me over on Instagram at Elise Dharma or on my website, elisedharma.com. And if you're interested in the Instagram masterclass, you'll see it on my website too.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.